This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Close. It's been the story of Seattle's season. And so many times in close games, they pulled it out. And this game, like so many others, maybe it was a matter of inches, perhaps better eyesight from the side judge, maybe a clearer view on replay, or maybe it was a dropped pass, Malik Turner letting go of that one, or a third down pass protection in which Jermaine Ifedi just didn't quite get out to help out Jacob Hollister as Preston Smith came around. There are so many different plays to distill down for the reason why the Seattle Seahawks season ended last night in Green Bay. But it's worth noting how this team has continued to come back, and that while this season's over, kind of the journey that this team is on with Pete Carroll, with Russell Wilson, this might be a stepping stone along the way, but doesn't make it any less disappointing this morning.
You're exactly right. It's hard to look at what happened yesterday, especially realizing they were down 21-3, and yet they were so close to pulling off an improbable comeback on the road. If they make an NFL Films season in review video about this team, it's probably going to be titled Resilience, the story of the 2019 Seattle Seahawks, because they overcame injuries. They suffered more in this game, classic. They overcame deficits, and they overcame a lot of their own fairly major issues pretty much all season long, and finally, the issues we've been talking about all season, Danny, the offensive line having some issues in pass protection against dominant pass rushers, the defense really just having a tough time getting stops when it's absolutely necessary, and a ground game that we really liked early on in the year that they've been trying to keep going with, just not working in the same way because, well, Marshawn Lynch just isn't the same guy that maybe the Seahawks envisioned him as. And that's why the season ends. And it's a weird place to be because I went to bed being very proud of this team, Danny. This morning I'm waking up a little more frustrated because I really still think that this Green Bay Packers team was ripe for the picking.
I certainly don't think that this team underachieved. I don't feel that, hey, this was a team that didn't make the most of what they had. I do think there are some flaws, specifically on the defense, and we'll get to those in a second. But Russell Wilson had his best regular season of his career, and he had his best playoffs. He was awesome last night in the same way that he was awesome against Philadelphia. His scrambling, he was much more of a threat running the football than I thought he could be or would be at this point. He was great. He did not commit a turnover. He was incredible. And I think that the biggest question that I have coming out of this, is that enough? If you get a season like that from your franchise quarterback, did you get enough out of it to win 11 games, to win a playoff game on the road, and I don't want to be one of the final eight teams, and to come close in the divisional rounds of the playoffs? Is that enough? Do you label that as a success? It's certainly not a failure of a season, but I think it points to me, and I look at it and say, man, your quarterback plays that well, you should win that game. Your quarterback plays that well, and your quarterback's that good, and you really should win that game.
It's a fair point. It is also important to remember that we have seen similar seasons from elite quarterbacks in this past decade end the same way. Whether it was Tom Brady in a 14-2 MVP campaign going down to the New York Jets in the divisional round of the playoffs, or it was Aaron Rodgers going down with a 15-1 Packers team in the divisional round of the playoffs, or it was Saturday night where Lamar Jackson's season came to a crashing halt against the Tennessee Titans. The regular season of dominance doesn't really guarantee anything, sadly, in the playoffs. So I suppose you can hang your hat on that if you want. To answer your question, though, I think that just shows how great Russell was this season. He was able to overcome so much of the stuff around him. I don't know, Danny, if you were to compare the game against the Eagles with the game that we saw yesterday, what game you would pick as far as what impressed you more in terms of Russell Wilson's overall performance. And as awesome as he was against Philadelphia, this game yesterday was an unbelievable performance because it really did feel like he was doing everything by himself. The Russell Wilson that I fell in love with from afar while in Houston was on full display there. He was evading guys, making all sorts of ridiculous plays. He did have a little Josh Allen moment with that weird lateral, but he was figurating in behind the line of scrimmage, extending plays, and he was just amazing. The 277 yards, the one touchdown, it does not even come close to really just demonstrating how awesome he was in this game. I thought he was great. And
you look at the tale of this game was told by the jerseys of the two quarterbacks.
Yes, 100%. Aaron was clean.
You look at Russell, and you look at how many hits he took, how many plays he made, how hard it was for him. And I think that spoke to what was asked of him and what he was able to provide, because Green Bay had a lot going for it. Seattle really had Russell Wilson. That's Seattle really had Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf had a good catch. But it's not a one man band, and I don't ever want to say it, but Seattle's one advantage, the one hope that they had in this game was their quarterback. I was really moved by what he said afterward, because I think one of the things that is kind of a hollow part of sports is people will say, well, only one team really gets to have their dreams fulfilled. Because when Russell talked about this season and what this season meant to him, I thought he spoke to the hope that every Seahawks fan should have this morning, which is this is part of a longer story. This is a chapter. This is one part of a story that will continue next season, because he talked about what this season had meant to him and how he views it.
I would describe the season. I would say it would be a dream come true if we won it all, but despite the fact that we didn't win it all, it was still worth it. Everything was worth it. All the time, all the studying, all the film, all the write-ups, all the extra work, all the off-season training, and it was worth it.
I think it's important to recognize that hey, It was incredible to watch this team, and as much as your heartbeat gets affected, as much tension is there, it was awesome to see what they did. That was not a team that should have been 11 wins and making the playoffs and come that close. They pushed themselves to that point.
It's a little bit patronizing to give somebody essentially the medal of participation after a playoff loss, the good job, good effort afterwards, but honestly, isn't that the most appropriate thing to give this Seahawks team given how the season went?
Big, bright, red heart.
Right.
They had a ton of it. They had a ton of it. I will say one of the questions that I have coming out of the game, and I'm still not going to get to the defense yet. I'm going to wait to that. One of the questions I have coming out of it is, why can't Seattle run the good offense earlier? Now, when they need to score, they're really good. And they took the field in the second half, and you're like, they're probably going to have to score a touchdown every single time they get the ball. And which is not all that different from how you felt in the regular season finale against San Francisco. And when they get in those situations, they're really good. They scored three touchdowns on three straight possessions, which is really hard to do. And that's after a first half in which they moved the ball somewhat, but they never got the ball inside the Green Bay 20. They never got into the red zone. Why can't they run the good offense earlier?
I think there's a way to ask Pete Carroll this at 9:30, and maybe, Danny, you disagree with me, but I think the question is, can you pass to set up the run? Because if you can pass to set up the run, you can do some of the things that you wanted to do with Marshawn Lynch. Remember in the second half how winded the Packers looked? It looked at times like they were faking injuries. Maybe they were on one of them. I'm not 100% sure. Whatever the case, there was one drive in particular, I want to say it was the second one, where it felt like there was a Packer just lying down on the ground there. And I thought to myself there, man, this is the perfect time to use Marshawn Lynch. Do you think anyone want to tackle that bow-legged crazy man at this point in the game? So I'm with you. It's the big frustration that's, I think, always going to make Seahawks Twitter, Seahawks fans go crazy. It was great to see in the second half just how amazing it is when they finally do break open the fire extinguisher glass and say, all right, Russ, save us. But why not just do it at the beginning of the game?
And now I'm ready to talk about the defense, which was every bit as flimsy as I feared. And really shouldn't have expected all that much different after what we saw this season. Their third down defense, their inability to get off the field. It's not just that Green Bay converted 9 of 14 third downs. It's how many of those were third and long, third and seven or longer, including two on their final possession when they clinched it. And yeah, I think Jimmy Graham was short. Yeah, I think Jimmy Graham was short. I really think he was short, but that was... in many ways, that was the final straw on a third down avalanche that broke Seattle's back.
Right. It's easy to get frustrated at the referees. I think things even themselves out. That Jacob Hollister fumble, the Seahawks got very lucky that the Packers early on in that game were not scoring a touchdown, and then after Seattle's first play, getting the football right back. But, I mean, on the drives at the end of this game, I mean, third and eight at Green Bay's own 22, and Aaron Rodgers finds Devontae Adams, who they had never had an answer for. Or Jimmy Graham is the guy that's beating you on multiple third downs in this game. Three of those third downs that you mentioned, Danny, Jimmy Graham's the guy that beat you.
That was just salt. That was just salt into the wound that was already gaping and sore and angry. It is Danny and Gallant. We will have Pete Carroll at 9:30. Brock Heward coming here at 8, but right now it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Texans led 24-0. That was in the AFC divisional playoff game yesterday.
Oh,
and
my.
The Chiefs erased that. They scored four touchdowns in the second quarter. Three of those came in the span of about 6 minutes on the game clock.
I watched the first half of this game at our 710 ESPN studios because I had done the pregame show with Tom Wassel and Stacey Rost. And I think Jess went to go do an update when the score was 24-0 and came back in and it was 24-21. It was like a matter of about 5 minutes.
Yes, that is very true.
It was ridiculous how quickly that game changed. I don't know what to say other than Kansas City is that explosive. The Texans decide up 24-7 to go for it on their side of the field on a fake punt on 4th and 4. They get stopped short. When that play happened, even though I sort of respect the play call, the game was over. It was over right there, even though they were still up 17 points.
I don't get why you faked the punt when you decided not to go for it on 4th and 1 the previous possession.
That's a great point.
I don't get it.
A makeup 4th and 1?
I don't think the fake punt is a bad call. But I don't understand not going for it when the numbers would say it was much more advantageous to on 4th and 1 instead of kicking the field goal and decide then the next one, well, now we might be in trouble, so we're going to fake the punt. That was bad calculation.
Here's something that'll make you feel better today. The Houston Texans lost a divisional round playoff game, and they feel like the sky is falling. They want to fire their coach. They feel like they're the poor man's version of the Dallas Cowboys, forever stuck in mediocrity with a head coach that's made of Teflon. Here we are looking at it with an entirely different lens.
What to watch for?
How about the Tennessee Titans, who took down the Baltimore Ravens on Saturday night, and they will take on the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC title. Meanwhile, the San Francisco 49ers, it was never even in doubt remotely against the Minnesota Vikings in the early game on Saturday. It'll be San Francisco and Green Bay in the NFC Championship game. It's their fourth NFC Championship the last 10 years.
Yeah, each team has played, and this will be their fourth. The Titans, what happened to Baltimore's defense? People will talk about Lamar Jackson, and there were some bad turnovers, but he actually played pretty well. Like, he put up stats. They couldn't tackle Derrick Henry.
Earl Thomas said going into the week that the Patriots didn't want to tackle the Titans the week before. They didn't want to tackle Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry had more rushing yards against the Ravens than he did against the Patriots. And I think the worst play of all was when Earl Thomas got spun around like a top, and essentially, like, Derrick Henry was a bouncer throwing him out of the club on that long, like, 40-yard run, one of many on the game.
Stiff-armed him, then pushed him in the back.
Used him as a blocker.
Yeah,
that's true. He did. He turned him around. He was like a reluctant blocker. I've got little Earl, and I'm using him as a bludgeon.
I'm really curious to see if Tennessee can do it again, because Kansas City's defense is not very impressive either. We'll see. This is a much more intriguing than maybe at first glance matchup in the AFC Championship game.
What to watch for?
Hey, there's still college football. National Championship game tonight.
It's still
Clemson
on?
LSU, yes. Do they make a mistake? I mean, this is a long way removed from January 1st.
I'm not going to lie.
Two weeks out.
Danny, last Monday, I was like scrambling on my Sling app trying to find where the national championship game was. I was thinking to myself, wait, where is it? Why isn't it on? Why is there a game between a MAC team and a Sun Belt team
two
on
weeks,
right now?
Man. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks deep.
Man, they might be a little bit rusty at the very beginning of this one. We know how college football can get. Who do you like in this one?
I want to see LSU win. I want to see Ed Orgeron win.
Ed's our guy.
No interest in seeing Dabo Swinney get another national title.
Same.
That is what to watch for. It is Danny and Gallant. We now bring in the professor, John Clayton, for our morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, you're wading your way through the snow, and then you're going to come back to snow. It's just a mess out there.
Yeah, what's it look like in the evening? Am I going to be able to make it back? I'm right now in the process of going from Green Bay to O'Hare, and I've got a 4 o'clock flight in O'Hare. How's it look as far as, are they going to be taking planes or not taking planes?
Well, there's a little bit of snow on my way into work.
I think you're going to be fine. I think the roads are going to be just fine, John.
Okay.
What do you make of that game last night?
Just basically that I think the injuries caught up to him. I think, you know, you're out there, you're with your fourth string running back, your fourth string tight end, you're with now your third string, briefly a third string center, a third string guard, and, you know, you still have your issues on defense that have to be addressed in the offseason. And, you know, you fall behind, Russell starts putting on a show, gets the drives to start getting him back in the game. But the margin of error with all these injuries keep going down and down and down. And I think it finally just caught up to this team.
Was there anything that you noticed from the sideline about why the Packers were so successful on those third downs?
It's Aaron Rodgers. Oh, you're talking about on the third downs on defense? Or
right,
third downs
defense.
On
defense for the Seahawks, yes.
Well, because they got, you know, they got a pass rush. You know, they got decent play in the secondary. They're okay with, you know, Kenny Clark and the defensive line. I mean, they're good, but they're not great. You can still run on them, but, you know, they were able to make plays. But of course, I mean, when you have two pass rushers like, they have in the two Smiths, you know, they had 4 sacks in the game yesterday and 25 and a half in the regular season. I mean, you know, you're always going to get pressure. And then of course you mix in some blitzes, you do some things like that, and that causes problems.
John, did Trey Flowers have as bad a game as it looked like he did?
Yeah, it was not good. Because, I mean, you know, I think you can see coaching-wise what they were able to do was go ahead and, you know, just work Davante Adams more to his side than anything else. Because when you think about it, I mean, you saw very little on Shaq Griffin's side, because, you know, all there was, like, for wide receivers, there's only 2 catches for a 19 yards on wide receivers not named Davante Adams. But the one thing that you can see that Aaron Rodgers is so good at is when he does 4 seconds trying to move around, the only guy he can really go to is Davante Adams. And if you can't take Adams away, then he's going to have the 160 yards, 8 catches that he had, and they're going to be able to move the ball and do all those things. So now, you know, Trey did not have a good game. Shaq, I think, did have a good game. And you saw the one touchdown, of course. I don't know about the confusion or communication with Ugo Amadi and Flowers, but, I mean, wide open on the one.
There was a lot of hullabaloo over the Seahawks deciding to punt the football with 2:41 to play, 3 timeouts on a 4th and 11 from their own 36. Did you think that was the correct decision?
I'm not overly critical of it because, I mean, you saw that it really took an incredible play by Jimmy Graham and was a debatable play whether he made the first down to be able to, you know, get the first down. Because if not, they would have gotten the ball back and they would have had time with Russell Wilson to be able to do it. So again, this is going back to last week where, you know, again, the play that killed him obviously was the play that got the 5-yard penalty for delay of game, and then 2 shots where they were at the 1-yard line and, you know, just could not get the ball in. Well, here's one where they got the 1-yard gain by Graham just at the very end, because if not, then, you know, who knows what would have happened. But I'm not overly critical of that.
John, Marshawn ended up with 12 carries. In the first half, it really looked like they were trying to run their 2014 offense, giving him the ball. Did that lead to them falling into a hole? Would they have been better off kind of throwing caution to the wind and taking a more Russell-centric approach to offense?
No, I think you have to try it because you have to see, you know, where the Packers are in trying to stop the run. And again, it's like if you're going to be one-dimensional from the very beginning, you're going to have problems. I mean, you look at the history with Russell Wilson, you know, once he gets about a certain number passing, it's hard for them to win. And so that's an issue. So no, I think you got to try it, but then, you know, you also got to have the defense to try to keep you better in the game to be able to make sure. Cause then what happens is you fall behind by 21-3 and now you are one dimensional. All you can do is pass the football.
Tyler Lockett's the epitome of class act, an exceptionally nice guy, but I thought it was very noteworthy during this game to see how animated and fired up and talking trash he was. Did you get a hear for any of the things that he was saying on the sideline, and did you know what it was that made Lockett act this way in this game?
No, I was not. I'm not privy to that because it's more on the other side than it is on my side because I'm over in the Packers sideline. But, yeah, I mean, you can just see that he was fired up. I mean, he wanted to win, just like Russell Wilson wanted to win. And you're right. I mean, normally a very quiet guy, he takes the one shot early in the game. It was a clean shot and all that stuff, but just how tough he was. But you can see that this team wanted to win. You know, unfortunately, it fell 5 points short.
John, other games this weekend, I think the big surprise for everyone was Tennessee going into Baltimore and knocking off the Ravens. Was that a sign of maybe Lamar Jackson just not being as efficient? Or was it a problem with Baltimore's defense unable to stop Derrick Henry?
No, without question, it was a problem with the defense because what you can see is that Derrick Henry changes the equation of where defenses are going in this league. I mean, you saw Green Bay yesterday. They go nickel, and they pretty much only use one linebacker because they go more with the third safety. And so they want speed, not necessarily bulk. And when you have a 245-pound back like Henry, you need bulk. And you saw that Henry, you know, basically bulked down a couple times on Earl Thomas. And so, you know, I think that, you know, he kind of changes the equation because, you know, he ends up, you know, having, what, 370 yards or 380 yards in two games, better than anybody we've seen. And he's just a hot running back right now. When you have a hot running back, you're not going to have as many plays. And then, you know, I think Greg Roman had a bad game play calling because what he had to do was he threw too many passes. He didn't run the ball like he normally did. So they just got out of sync on offense, and they just had a bad game on defense. And, you know, Tennessee didn't have to rely much on Ryan Tannehill, you know, because now, what is it? He's got 17 completions in two games and 160 yards in two games, yet they're in the AFC championship game.
Is Texans head coach Bill O'Brien in trouble job-wise after blowing a 24-0 lead?
Well, when John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, who's kind of chronicled the team for four decades and is probably as good a beat guy as you're going to see in football or any sports, comes out to and his column was, it's time to move on from Bill O'Brien. You know, he's not getting it just himself. I mean, I'm sure he's getting it. So I have to think that you look at Bill, he's been to four playoffs, he's won two games, and, you know, they've kind of reached the apex of where they're going to go, even though they have one of the top three quarterbacks, top four quarterbacks in the AFC in Deshaun Watson. And now with his trades, they only have one pick in the top three rounds of the next two drafts. So they went all in this year, and it just didn't get him far. Got him to the divisional title game, and Tennessee ended up going a little bit further. I have to think that he's going to be reviewed. I don't think he's going to be fired right now, but I think he's on the hot seat for next year.
They got one quarter closer to getting to the AFC championship game. They were one quarter of the way there in that game. That was as stunning a turnaround as I've seen. John, we want you to stay safe out there. We want you to get home safe and sound, and we look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
Let's hope it's from Seattle.
Yes, let's hope. That is the Professor John Clayton, his morning drive, I think, in that case, quite literal, as he's headed to the airport in Chicago. It is Danny and Gallant. Don't call it a comeback. The Seahawks have been doing this for years, erasing halftime deficits, putting suckers in fear. It just wasn't quite enough. We'll let you hear the sounds of this Seahawks coming storming back next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We're going to spend a lot of time today poking the cadaver that was the ultimate result of yesterday's performance with a stick, exactly what the cause of death was. We're going to try to perform an autopsy, all these different things. But for one segment, I thought we would indulge ourselves with the thoughts of what almost was. Because I've seen this team come back from being 20 points down on the road in the divisional playoffs against Atlanta. We've watched them erase 20-point deficits. They did it in Houston. back in 2013 in a game they won in overtime. They have shown a resilience and an ability to come back, and this was a game that was building in that direction. They trailed by 18 points at halftime. They got the ball to open the second half, knowing that they needed a touchdown to put themselves back in the conversation. That's exactly what they got.
Lynch in the backfield. Lynch gets the handoff, bounces off a tackler. He fights. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks! From a yard out, Marshawn Lynch scores his third touchdown since unretiring and coming back to the team. He helped win a Super Bowl, and the Seahawks, on their opening drive of the second half, do exactly what they needed to do. Come out and score, and it's 21-9.
How anxious were you on that first drive of the second half? Because there was a little anxiousness in me. And, I mean, they did have to get aggressive on that drive when they had that, I thought, brilliant play call, throwing it to Tyler Lockett on that fourth down conversion.
Yes. I was excited because I thought that they were going to come out. I think the Seahawks is really, the offense is really good when they know they need to score. And I don't know whether it is that Russell feels a little more urgency, so he's willing to let go of the ball and maybe take a little more chance. I don't know if it's the play calling that comes, or maybe it's being untethered from this desire to keep running the ball. Whatever it was, I was pretty confident they were going to score a touchdown there. I knew they didn't have much room for error, and I feared that they just weren't going to be able to get enough stops to win it. I thought they'd score there. That's the right use for Marshawn Lynch. That's the right way to use him in this game, is in short yardage situations and especially near the goal line. And in some ways, the first half was kind of testing to see if they could be able to do that. I thought it was a waste of time, but they found a way to use him effectively in the second half.
They did, and it might have been, honestly, on the second play, Danny, of that drive, because they throw an incomplete pass on first down. Marshawn rushes for just 4 yards. It's third and six, and then Russ takes off for a 22-yard scramble on that third down and six. And that was when Russell's feet started to take over the game.
He did. He absolutely was a factor running the ball. Seattle gave up a touchdown. Green Bay came back and scored. So once again, Seattle is down 18. And if their back was up against the wall coming out of halftime, well, it was even more firmly there for their second possession of the second half. And Seattle absolutely responded.
Russ takes it, slides to his right side, looking to the end zone, looking. Now he fires a dart. Touchdown, Seahawks! Tyler Lockett slams that ball into the turf as Russ gets outside and waits for his receiver to uncover in the back of the end zone. From 7 yards out, Seattle answers back to the answer of the Packers, and it's 28-16.
Sometimes when he rolls out and scrambles or he's just trying to extend a play, I get a little antsy just because I think, you're running out of space. You're running out of space there. And then all of a sudden he just throws it, and Tyler Lockett's right there, wide open. The sync that those two had in this game was as good as it's been all year long. It started with that beautiful little bloop pass that he threw, arcing it perfectly to Tyler Lockett on that first catch and run. And on that play as well, it was fantastic. There was a 13-yard catch that they had between them earlier on that drive as well. And look, that's something that you definitely have to build off of, in addition to the vast potential that DK Metcalf theoretically you have with him going forward.
Tyler Lockett catches 9 passes, targeted 10 times, 136 yards. Yes, Devontae Adams was incredible with 8 catches for 160 yards and 2 touchdowns, but Tyler Lockett was equally and as impressive in his role on Seattle's offense.
He took a helmet-to-helmet shot on a reception, and he still caught it, and he got up like it didn't affect him at all.
Jumping into the neutral zone is Clark. Free play for Russ. Going to throw it up over the top. Ball is caught. Great catch by Lockett. How did he hang on to that ball? He was hammered down to the ground by King, but Russ hung on, and it's a free play. And King is the one who stays down on the near sideline, takes a knee after trying to level Tyler Lockett.
He was pumped up, and you saw the emotion of it. It was weird because it almost seemed like some players reacted like it was the play was blown dead. I thought it might have been blown dead. It's absolutely the right call to take a shot down the field there. You get a freebie. And it was nice to see the Aaron Rodgers approach get turned back around on the Green Bay Packers. Speaking of which, what the hell was up with Za'Darius Thomas being able to tackle Russell Wilson? You can do that? If you just run through the line, you can just tackle the quarterback? Well, no, but he jumped off sides, and you just get to tackle the quarterback.
Yeah. Well, hey, Danny, you're the one that said that's what Jadeveon Clowney and anyone who jumps off sides on the Seahawks should do. Didn't you say that this past week?
Do you think that's how it would have been if Clowney had gone across the line and clobbered Aaron Rodgers that way? Everybody would have said, oh, it's okay. You know, he's just able to go through.
No, they would have said Clowney needs to be executed because he's a dirty player. By the way, when Clowney jumps off sides, Clowney gets really down on himself and needs to actually do something other than throwing his hands up in the air. That's neither here nor there. It's not really relevant to this current conversation, but you're right. So Darius Smith is just like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to take Russ out.
Just going to tackle him. I just ran through the B gap. Absolutely. I just ran through your A gap. I'm going to throw the quarterback to the ground. Seattle finally got within a score. They finally made it a one-score game. That happened in the fourth quarter, and at this point, it was clear that time was as much of an opponent as Green Bay because Seattle was being able to move the ball and score almost at will.
Lynch stays in the game. He gets the handoff, puts his helmet down, and he's in! Touchdown! Seahawks from 1 yard out! 9.5 minutes to play, and the Seahawks have closed this gap 28-23.
Is this the equivalent of needing to have your closer in a save situation? It's one of my least favorite arguments in baseball, is that the closer is best in a save situation, because I'm like, no, he should be able to play. He should be able to perform his best no matter what situation it is. But people will swear, and there are players, like a couple of years ago, Edwin Diaz was not as good when he was put in non-save situations. Does Russell just need that urgency? Like, he's a closer, so you need to have him in a save situation to truly get him at his best.
Maybe you do. I mean, Danny, when I was in Houston, there was this pitcher by the name of Ken Giles who was an absolute disaster whenever he was pitching with a tie game or with a deficit. But when he had a lead, he was great. I have no idea why the discrepancy was the way that it was, and Ken Giles was a bit of a head case because he literally punched himself in the face several times while walking off the mound after blowing a save against the Yankees. It's on YouTube if you want to really see it for yourself. I think that's something that we're going to have to figure out by next year, why it is that the Seahawks, when there is a sense of urgency amongst them, the offense is so effective. Because maybe that is it. Maybe it is. Wow, all of a sudden, and to what you were saying a little bit earlier, now Russell feels like he can take risks. He feels like he can be a little bit more of a gunslinger.
The other option is that perhaps you've got an offensive game plan that changes, whether it's through desperation or whether it's through sort of recognition that the run game is something that you need to abandon, that you need to stop running on middle downs, that it's okay to throw a pass on first down. It could be that as well. The continuing perplexing thing for me about this team is that we have seen that kind of first half offensive performance where, for lack of a better term, it looks like they just kind of futz around. They just kind of move around and, hey, it's not the end of the world. It's not like they didn't move the ball. They had 130. Seattle actually, like, they have 1 yard fewer entering the fourth quarter than the Packers did. The Packers, it's not like they moved it at will. The Packers were just really efficient, and when they got the ball and they got it inside the red zone, they punched it in. The Seahawks, they made one field goal. They missed another. They never got it inside the Packer 20 in the first half. And then their back's up against the wall, and once they start scoring, it's kind of like, okay, now you've got to be perfect. And if you're not perfect, say if Malik Turner drops a pass on first down on a series, or that Seattle isn't able, Jacob Hollister is blocking Preston Smith, and it sure looks like Jermaine Ifedi is kind of the guy that's there to help out, but he didn't get quite wide enough. If it doesn't go perfect, or if the side judge says that Jimmy Graham got a first down, I can understand how they spotted it right at the first down marker. I don't get how he got to the 35.
I don't either.
I don't get how he got there on the bounce. Dude got there on the bounce.
I don't know why this can't change. There's no point in reviewing ball spots. The refs never turn themselves in and overturn a call of a ball spot on the field. They never do it. Even when there is some video evidence that indicates, okay, well, how about we just bring the ball out to this spot and remeasure? That's what I don't understand the most. I feel like it's a very easy thing to at least try to do. Okay, let's move the ball to a spot that's slightly more appropriate if we're going to take all this time to look at it and remeasure. Shouldn't that be an effective strategy? I think so.
Sure looked like Jimmy Graham's helmet was down where the first down marker
was. It did.
It sure looks like his helmet was.
The ball probably wasn't.
And the ball was not. And I guess maybe they didn't have a crystal clear view of it, but that shirt, I can guarantee he wasn't at the 35. He got there on the bounce. It's Danny and Gallant. I'll try to keep from railroading the officiating, because that's not ultimately
what decided the game. We're not anti-ref guys.
No, not that. Well, Marshawn Lynch, he provided baking tips and advice that can be used for anyone in the barnyard. Seriously, how to tend chickens with Marshawn Lynch next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Marshawn Lynch scored four touchdowns in his three games that he played with the Seattle Seahawks. Two of them yesterday. I thought they fed him the ball a little bit too much too early. I didn't need to see one series where they just handed the ball to him three straight
times.
Run,
pun?
Yeah, although when you watch how it happened, it was an 8-yard gain and then a 1-yard gain and then held for no gain.
I can so kind of understand it, right, because of the 8-yard gain.
But it was still, that was tough. In a game, and I would say this, in a game where your defense isn't capable of stopping the other guy, you can't afford to cede entire possessions. You can't have a possession where your best player doesn't have a chance to impact it. And that's exactly what that was because, look, their chance, and it was very clear in retrospect, was Russell Wilson. At the same time, I like what Marshawn Lynch brought back to this team. I thought he was the right guy to bring back, and I think that he delivered. He had a net positive impact on Seattle.
I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, look at where we were after the Seahawks had lost that game to the Arizona Cardinals. This team felt like they were dead. And I can only imagine how the locker room felt after that loss, because that was one of those games where, with the injuries that they had suffered, it just looked like everything had become insurmountable for them going forward. And, yeah, the down-the-stretch finish for the Seahawks still was, what, four losses in six games? But at the same time, I thought that he gave them a much-needed shot in the arm of adrenaline.
They also, those final two losses, came to the two teams that are left alive
exactly.
In the NFC, and they came in games in which Seattle was acquitted itself very well, was incredibly competitive,
exactly.
Went down to the absolute wire. There's also the fact that this provides a bookend to Marshawn Lynch's Seahawks career, and there was no bitter aftertaste of the first time around. It was still cool to see him celebrated coming back and to realize how much he resonates. He is one of the most beloved players in Seattle sports history. He's one of the most enjoyable guys that I've had to cover, not because of really anything he said, though when he talked, he was hilarious, but just the presence that he was. That guy is a truly unique professional athlete in a time when a lot of guys are very, very cookie cutter, are very regimented, have publicists and have agents to handle everything. Marshawn Lynch was always unapologetically himself.
He's authentic, and he's authentic in a way where we want more of that authenticity, and he's smart enough to know that I'm only going to give you a tease of what I actually am. And I don't know. I mean, I would definitely watch a reality TV show with Marshawn Lynch. I'm sure he would absolutely hate the idea of something like that.
Oh, no, he did the thing
he
on Facebook.
One.
You
yeah.
got to go look out of that. Yes, on Facebook.
Well, I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds amazing.
That's where we met Mr. Science Man.
Scientist! You can freeze a lot of things, scientist, but the J's ain't one. The scientist had used liquid nitrogen and frozen his J's. It is Danny and Gallant. And here was Marshawn Lynch's press conference, maybe the last press conference, certainly the first one I can remember him having other than the Super Bowl, last night after the game.
Vanny. I know it's solid. They're pretty solid. Lost.
Come back next year?
I mean, we'll see what's happening. But look, I'll say like this, though, right? It's a vulnerable time for a lot of these young dudes, you feel me? They don't be taking care of their chicken right, you feel me? So if it was me or if I had an opportunity to let these little young sahabs know something, I say take care of y'all money, African, because that don't last forever. Now, I done been on the other side of a retirement, and it's good when you get over there and you can do what you want to. So I tell y'all right now while y'all in it, take care of y'all bread. So when y'all done, you go ahead and take care of yourself. So while y'all at it right now, take care of y'all bodies. You know what I mean? Don't take care of y'all chicken. You feel me? Don't take care of y'all mentals. Because, look, we ain't lasting that long. You know, I had a couple players that I played with that, you know what I mean, they no longer here no more. They no longer. So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken. So when y'all ready to walk away, you walk away and you be able to do what you want to do. But I appreciate it. Thank y'all. I have a good day.
I had not heard chicken used for money, which I'm assuming that's what it is. That's used in the context. I do love all of the different slang terms for money. I've always been preferential to cabbage, especially when the rappers from Styles of Beyond would say, "My cabbage is picked, man," which I was like, oh, that's a fantastic way to refer to getting paid. Cheddar, also good.
I'm more of a cheddar guy.
Take care of your chicken. Take care of your chicken for Marshawn Lynch. I do think they went to him too much early on. I thought Travis Homer was the guy more suitable. I would have liked to see their carries flip-flopped in the game from a strategic standpoint. And there was, especially when they handed it to him three straight times, where I thought to myself, I was like, they really did mean they were going to try and turn it back and have him be 2014 Marshawn Lynch in the Seahawks offense.
Part of me wishes that that press conference right there had happened like today or tomorrow, because I remember when I first saw it, I was like, this is great. This is awesome. This is funny. This is Marshawn being Marshawn. But at the same time, I sort of wanted a little less of Marshawn, because I felt like yesterday's story was all about Russell Wilson. And I would like Marshawn to have his own day, essentially, where he can sort of give his own version of a retirement press conference, because that's basically what that was, right? And maybe that's something that he realized halfway through the questions he was answering, because he doesn't really answer. Then all of a sudden he's like, hey, guys, make sure you save your money and make sure that you're thinking about the future. It was a great way to go out.
I don't know if it was retirement. He said, we'll deal with it later. I'm not sure if he's ready. I don't know what he expects. I think that was about not getting fined by the league. I think that was strictly about not getting fined by the league, and he didn't want one last bite of his paycheck on the way out the door this year. He wasn't going to pay them to come back. It is Danny and Gallant. We've got Brock Heward coming in. Pete Carroll's show is at 9:30. Brock Heward for Blue 42 next. And that's going to include some tough questions about this defense. Is it the personnel or is it the plan? We'll ask him next.